In a time like none of us have experienced before, there's strength to be found in community institutions like Iowa Public Radio. I'm Executive Director Myrna Johnson, and I'm so proud of the thoughtful, informed coverage IPR brings you on the issues that matter. Listener funding is the power source that makes it all possible. Facts, understanding, insight, that's what you fund when you give to this station. Make your gift now at iowapublicradio.org, and thank you.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Even though Biden won the White House, Democrats lost ground in the U.S. House and in the Iowa legislature. Later in the hour, my conversation with the new chair of the Iowa Democratic Party, Ross Wilburn. Representative Wilburn will be joining us. I'll ask him about his views on the 2020 election outcome, also the future of the Iowa caucuses, now 1 year after our first in the nation contest ended with that muddle of delayed results. Let's spend this first half hour catching up with what's been happening at the Iowa State House. Joining us to do that, Katarina Sestarek, IPR state government reporter. Hi, Katarina.
Hi, Ben.
And Kathy Obradovich, editor-in-chief of the Iowa Capital Dispatch. Kathy, welcome to you.
Thanks for having me, Ben.
Let's start off with education, a few facets there to cover, which both of you have been reporting on. Katarina, would you start us off with some education, an education funding proposal that's been released that's getting a lot of talk in Des Moines?
The House and Senate are considering their education funding proposals today, actually right now, at separate subcommittees. And they are proposing, the Senate is proposing a 2.2% increase in base student funding, base per student funding, and the House and the governor are proposing a 2.5% increase. It's a little different this year because there is a coronavirus-related drop in school enrollment. So the dollar amount increase in that funding is projected to be a lot less than last year's. And then, you know, most of those students might return next school year. So there are concerns that this would actually trigger property tax increases in more school districts to make up that gap in funding. And then there's also an aspect where Republican leaders are proposing, kind of in different ways, but a similar trend of proposing giving additional money to schools that followed the governor's direction to be in school primarily in person. And then one of the proposals from the House Republicans would even give less money to the schools that were following the governor's orders to be primarily in person, but chose a hybrid model.
So a bit of a reward as part of the proposal. Kathy Obradovich, what do you find most interesting about this debate over education funding?
And there's a couple things here, Ben. One is that, just as Katarina just said, this differential based on how many days each school district had students in person. No matter how you slice it, the Des Moines Public Schools get sliced out of this money, and it's about $2 million for them. In violation, really, of the Iowa Department of Education's process, and they never did get a waiver, and that is going to cost them now. The other part of it is this all has a heightened level of controversy this year because of the governor's other big education piece, which is a private school bill. She's billing it as student choice, but what it does is expand taxpayer-funded grants for private school tuition and expenses. Now, opponents of that bill tend to think that the state is already underfunding public schools, and so they object to sending more taxpayer dollars to private schools. But that also means that they're watching very closely whether they think that the public schools are getting as much money as they think they need from the state, and of course they will not be satisfied with this.
Mm-hmm. Kathy, and I understand that some Republicans living in rural districts are not super enthusiastic about this so-called school choice bill.
No. In fact, the Senate has passed the bill already with a bare number of positive votes. So they passed it with 26 votes, even though there were several Republicans who essentially voted no on this. The House is taking a longer time, and they've run some parts of this overall bill in a piecemeal way. dealing with open enrollment, which is a signal to some that, you know, they don't have enough members on board with this entire bill. The governor and Republican legislative leaders have said, well, it's just a matter of education. You know, we have to make sure to answer everybody's questions. But usually when a bill proceeds this way, it definitely means that there's not enough majority party votes on board.
Katarina, I wonder if you can tell us a little bit more about, from your reporting, your conversations there about why there's a lack of support even among Republicans for this school choice proposal.
Well, you know, there's rural districts that don't even have any private schools, so there's not really, you know, it's not really that everyone in the state would have the same choices for education. And then there's concerns about pulling money away from public schools and giving it to private schools instead, when obviously public school advocates will say, hey, we need all the resources we can get, especially now with the coronavirus pandemic. And I think there's just been a history in the Iowa legislature of various, you know, school choice bills coming up, even as Republicans have had full majority, and they just have not had enough support to pass in the past in the Iowa legislature. It's just not something that's had historically full Republican support in this legislature. Mm-hmm.
Let's talk. You mentioned COVID a couple of times. Of course, that has a lot of bearing on how school has been conducted over the past year. The governor making headlines, not just in the state, but across the country, Washington Post, New York Times, with her announcement of lifting coronavirus restrictions. There's a narrative that happened last week in the legislature. Katarina, perhaps you can tell us the genes story that took place in the Iowa House related to COVID.
Right. There's no mask requirement in the Iowa legislature. It's led by Republicans, and House Speaker Pat Grassley has said repeatedly that he cannot enforce a mask mandate. He can't keep legislators from voting on the floor of the Iowa House if they aren't wearing a mask. And, you know, from what I've seen, there's many people are wearing masks, but there's some who aren't wearing masks and they're doing everything in person. And there's been 5 COVID-19 cases tied to the Iowa House so far that have been reported. And one Democratic representative, Representative Beth Wessel-Crichel of Ames, wore jeans in violation of the House's dress code. And Speaker Grassley enforced that by not allowing her to speak on the floor of the House of Representatives during a debate. And she was allowed to stay there and to vote. But so he did enforce the dress code, but still claims that he could not enforce a mask mandate without getting state troopers involved.
Mm-hmm. Kathy Obradovich, do you think that maneuver by Representative Wessel-Crichel of Ames had the intended effect?
I don't think so. And I think for a couple of reasons. I mean, first of all, people who think that lawmakers should be wearing masks on the floor weren't likely to be impressed by what, you know, looked like a stunt from a Democratic lawmaker. But here's the difference. I mean, Speaker Grassley can enforce a dress code, which is already in House and Senate rules and has been for many, many years. And he did enforce it by not allowing a member to speak. He could not, however, have enforced it by keeping that member out of the chamber and preventing her from voting. And I think that's what we're talking about with the mask mandate, right? What good is it to say to a lawmaker, you're not wearing a mask, so you can't speak, but you can still be on the floor and you can still vote and you can still spread your germs around everybody. So, I think that, you know, they're trying to make a point about the enforceability of a mask mandate, but I don't think it's quite the same thing as the dress code.
You've just joined us, my guests, this half hour as we catch up on what's happening in the Iowa State House. Kathy Obradovich, editor-in-chief of the Iowa Capital Dispatch, you just heard. Also, our own Katarina Sestarek, IPR state government reporter. Let's look at some of the other things that you both, one or the other, has been reporting on. Katarina, catch us up on there's a couple of amendments afoot to possible amendments to the Iowa Constitution. One involves gun rights. How far has that progressed, and what does that involve in changing our Constitution?
Right. The gun rights amendment has gotten as far as it can go in the legislature. The House and Senate passed it 2 weeks ago now. And that was the second, well, they've actually passed it several times, but so it's now eligible for to be on the ballot in 2022. Iowans will get to vote on that. And what it would do is add language to the Iowa Constitution that says that the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. And it gives direction to courts that says they have to use the highest standard of judicial review when evaluating any restrictions on guns. So this is something that Republicans have been saying is needed to protect against any future gun restrictions. But Democrats are saying, you know, this could potentially be used to dismantle Iowa's existing gun laws because it's very rare for states to have that kind of strict scrutiny language in the Constitution related to gun rights.
Right. So look for that on our ballots. Katarina, the final step. If that would be affirmed, what, by a simple majority of voters in our next election in 2022, then that would become a change to the Constitution.
Right.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about business in Iowa. Kathy, you've been looking at and reporting on a new report by the Iowa Business Council that outlines a workforce shortage and problems there. Tell us a little bit about this latest report and the implications that you're seeing there at the legislature.
Sure, Ben. The Iowa Business Council is a group of really the top 20-some employers of the state of Iowa, and they put out a report every year on the business climate that they're seeing in Iowa and make recommendations for, you know, what they think is really needed for the state. And, you know, this year, as they often have, they have raised concerns about workforce. But this year, they really, I think, ramped up their concern. They said, as they looked at the most recent population figures for the state, which, of course, have not yet been updated with the current census, they're seeing actual declines in population, not just, Iowa maintaining stagnant population while other states are growing. But they're actually, they say, their view of the census figures that are sort of midterm is alarming to them. And so they are saying that the state needs to pay attention to this, that they need to work on efforts to attract people into the state. And, you know, there's a variety of ways to do this. Some of these are not new recommendations, like, you know, improving broadband, improving childcare, which the state is going to be working on. I think the Iowa House has several bills this week that they'll probably be working on. And housing is another big issue when it comes to attracting workers. Ultimately, though, the bottom line is that businesses say if they cannot get workers with the skills that they need, that they just can't grow in Iowa.
Mm-hmm. And we'll choose another location to grow. And we're talking about some of Iowa's biggest businesses, Deere, Principal, and others as well. For those who might not see the direct connection, you mentioned childcare. That's been a problem, and we've addressed that many times on this program. Childcare availability. In this report, it has a real economic cost to not having sufficient childcare in our state, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if people can't find childcare, they can't work. And, you know, this was heightened, obviously, by the pandemic, where kids were working, you know, kids were schooling at home. It's part of the dynamic that's run into this push for in-person instruction as well. But, ultimately, you know, there's a variety of problems with childcare. One is that the operators don't get paid enough. One is that, you know, there needs to be seed money to start up these operations. And so that the Iowa House last year actually passed 5 bills in one day dealing with expanding childcare opportunities and dealing with some regulatory issues. The Senate only passed one of those before they sort of took their COVID hiatus, and a lot of these bills were jettisoned. So the House, again, is taking the lead on this. They have 6 bills on their calendar that are ready to run and probably will go this week, dealing with tax credits and for parents and assistance for businesses that offer childcare, or matching grants for communities that want to create their childcare operations, and plus public assistance for childcare. So all of those things are problems in Iowa.
Yeah, and do you feel, in comparison to last year, Kathy, there's more pressure to improve childcare in the state?
I think so. Because of COVID, I think it, again, raised awareness of the problems that people had getting to work under the pandemic when they have no place to take their kids. So childcare, already lots of childcare deserts in Iowa, places where there just are no opportunities or no affordable opportunities. That got worse because of the pandemic.
Mm-hmm. Katarina, pick up there on the topic of broadband that Kathy mentioned here. Of course, broadband, you know, who is going to locate in Iowa when certain parts of the state have less than adequate broadband? In our rural areas, we have some problems there. Tell us a little bit more about the proposal here to expand broadband.
Yeah, so Governor Reynolds proposed spending $450 million over the next 3 years on broadband expansion. This is obviously a huge amount of money. So the Senate is the only chamber that has so far held a subcommittee meeting on the governor's broadband proposal. And it would also require that, I think, to get the highest amount possible for these broadband grants, companies would have to be installing internet with speed of 100 for download and upload of 100 megabits. And so this is something that, you know, there seems like there's still going to be a lot of discussion on the Senate subcommittee that considered it. There was a lot of support, a lot of enthusiasm for this, but they did not formally advance the bill, saying the Republicans who, you know, are in charge of the chamber were saying they need more time to keep discussing it. And I think there's also just some sticker shock from, you know, that price tag. And Senator Jason Schultz was saying, well, what could we do without spending all this money to improve the broadband situation? And so I think, you know, it still remains to be seen if Republicans are going to cough up that amount of money for broadband this year.
Mm-hmm. Kathy, from the outside, it looks like the support for broadband should be there. It's the rural areas of Iowa that are chiefly suffering under slower data speeds. So what do you see as there is a hesitancy to have this outlay of money to improve broadband in the state?
I think a couple of things. One, first of all, I think that the legislature's done most of what they can do without spending money. It comes right down to where the rubber meets the road, or are you going to invest anything in, you know, getting out to these rural areas where essentially private companies have looked at this and said, well, it's not very cost effective for us to build out these systems to get these folks that are sort of in outlying areas. You know, the one thing I would say that waiting might do for Iowa is that the Biden administration is also talking about broadband and broadband assistance. And so they might want to wait and see what kind of new money, new opportunities are being offered by the federal government before they commit to, you know, $450 million in state dollars. I think they'll spend some money this year. It probably won't be what the governor asked for.
Another aspect of making Iowa an attractive place for businesses to stay and to come and locate is housing. Katarina, tell us a little bit about the governor's housing bill. You've reported on this.
The governor has a big affordable housing bill out that, you know, affordable housing advocates and business groups are in support of. It would create a tax credit for developers of low-income housing, double the tax credits for workforce housing development, among many other things. So this is something that was advanced by a Senate subcommittee last week. And again, is something that has a lot of support, it seems, from various groups and maybe from both parties. But again, it's probably going to come down to the price tag on that bill and how much the legislature is really willing to spend on that.
Mm-hmm. We have just a few more minutes left. Kathy Obradovich, you've been reporting on the governor's police reform efforts there. Tell us a little bit about this. Stems, I assume, from the racial justice protests from last year.
Yes, and the governor had a wide-ranging, really, task force in place that worked the whole year last year on issues such as banning racial profiling in policing, requiring data collection on traffic stops, dealing with the race of the person who, the driver who is stopped, so that there can be an assessment of whether there's a race element in how a person is treated when they're stopped by police. And this included law enforcement as well as civil rights and racial justice advocates. And they came up with some pretty aggressive recommendations, including a ban on racial profiling and this data collection piece. What the governor did, though, which I think surprised some of these advocates, was to actually combine this with, what people might call a back the badge agenda. Harsher penalties for some crimes. If somebody's been arrested for rioting, you could be held for 24 hours, allowing police to pursue civil remedies against someone who files a false complaint against them. All of these things are going to be pretty controversial with the group that wanted the racial profiling ban. Mm-hmm. So far, you look at the list of lobbyists who are, as of Friday, only the governor's office was actually in favor of this. Everybody else was either opposed or undecided.
Mm. So going forward, do you see much chance of this, anything happening? It looks like the governor trying to appeal to both sides here and perhaps coming up with nothing or very little.
There may be pieces of this that move forward, but it stands really in sharp contrast with the police reform bills that passed last year, dealing with chokeholds, for example, passed in June, both chambers unanimously. It was a very bipartisan legislation. This is not going to be bipartisan in any way. And, I think that there are probably pieces of this that move forward, but probably not the controversial parts.
Okay, we've run out of time. Thank you very much for an update on goings-on at the Iowa State House. Kathy Obradovich, Editor-in-Chief of the Iowa Capital Dispatch, and Katarina Sestarik, our own state government reporter here at Iowa Public Radio. Katarina, Kathy, thank you so much for the update.
Thanks, Ben.
Coming up after a short break, my conversation, a conversation recorded earlier today with Ross Wilburn. He's a state representative. He's also the new leader of the Iowa Democrats, the Iowa Democratic Party, Ross Wilburn, coming up. That conversation after a short break. I'm Ben Kiefer on this snowy afternoon. More of River to River in just a moment.